Welcome to the Plant Cunning Podcast,
where we explore our relationship to plants, other people, and the mysteries of nature.
Coming to you from the High Allegheny Plateau in central New York,
we are your hosts, A.C. Staubel
and Isaac Hill. Welcome back to the Plant Cunning Podcast. This episode, we have Jane Holly Stevens, who is an herbalist, an herb farmer, and has written a new book called The Celestial Garden, which is a fantastic book about astrology and gardening, and it's really great. I think you're going to love this episode. Before we get to it, I have a few announcements. The first is that we are still having the second annual Plant Cunning Conference at our small farm in central New York. We have some amazing speakers, including Pam Montgomery, Seven Song, Michael Bryan, Rebecca Beyer, and many others. And this is happening the last weekend in July, so July 26th through 28th. Please get your tickets as soon as you can, because they will rise in price a little bit in after the end of May. So get them now. Also, I have a new book out. It's my first book, actually. It's called The Heathen Golden Dawn, and it's a book of ceremonial magic. There's some herbalism in there. There's some astrology in there, and it's a using the heathen symbolism, so Norse deities, Germanic deities, runes, and so on, with Golden Dawn techniques. And it was a lot of fun to write and to practice. So if you'd like to get that book, you can go to Aeon Books, the publisher, and get it there. You can also get it at the usual places to get a book. And as usual, please like, subscribe, comment, share, give us 5-star ratings and all of that fun stuff. We really appreciate it, and we appreciate you. So I hope you enjoyed the episode.
Today on the Plant Cunning Podcast, we're thrilled to have Jane Holly Stevens. Hi, Jane. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you, AC?
Doing awesome. So, Jane, you're an herbalist and a organic farmer for Four Elements Organic Herb Farm. Did I say that right?
Well, we call it Four Elements Organic Herbals.
Right. Elements Organic Herbals. Great. And so you do grow your own herbs and you also make herbal products. And you've written this amazing book, The Celestial Garden, Growing Herbs, Vegetables, and Flowers in Sync with the Moon and Zodiac. So this is something we definitely want to get into on this podcast. But we do have a traditional first question. And that is, how did you come to the plant path?
Well, I'd have to give the credit to my grandmother, who took me out to pick. Yeah. My grandmother was the outdoorsy one in the family, and she would take me for walks in the woods. But the most memorable time was when I was probably just 5 years old, and she took me to pick blueberries out deep in the woods. But I was so small. I could have been three, really, because, you know, but the sense of wonder that I had and magic, it was like I was transported to another planet. And when I was 18 and had to pick a career or what I was going to do, I remembered that moment. And I just said, I have to be outside. So found the best horticulture school in Wisconsin, University of Wisconsin-Madison, and went to school there. And my first job out of school, I was asked to put in an herb garden. So talk about good luck, right?
Wow. Yeah. Yeah.
So that's where I say the plants chose me. At that point.
Totally. Yeah. It's common to have those like really transformative young herb experiences, you know, with family members or mentors among this herb crowd. But that's amazing that your first job in horticulture just landed you right into an herb garden. Like, so perfect.
Yeah, it was lovely. And that was 81, about maybe 81 or 82.
Wow. Yeah. So then did you start to dive deeper into the herb world after that?
Oh, absolutely. So what happened? Well, of course, I was just so enchanted with just the textures and the smells and used them for cooking and crafts. But when my son was born in 87, he had repeated earaches. And so I took him to the doctor a couple times and found that what they were doing wasn't helpful. So I looked in my herb books and the plant happened to be blooming outdoors. And I am because I make products, the FDA says I'm not allowed to treat, mitigate, or cure disease. So I have to dance around everything I say. So, but it was this lovely fuzzy rosette of a plant with this yellow stalk with yellow flowers. And it, man, it was so beautiful. And there it was blooming. So I went out there, picked the flowers, warmed them in olive oil. And I even thought, this is kind of folkloric. It seems too simple, but you know how these plants work, right? So it worked instantly and so effective that this was like the hook. Then that was the rest of my life was decided. I was going to keep going with really medicinal herbalism. And I just knew that I hit just the top of a beautiful iceberg. And so just kept going with how the plants heal. And man, what a beautiful world that is to study how plants heal us. It's so phenomenal. And it's just a little sad that it takes all this, like you have to be outside the mainstream to really get into it, it seems.
Yeah, that's true.
It does seem like it's changing somewhat, especially over the last few years. There's a lot of distrust of the medical system, and people are really wanting to go back to nature. And seems like that impulse is gathering steam. It is hard to, when the dominant paradigm says herbs don't work, you know, astrology doesn't work, none of this stuff works. Mm-hmm. It can be hard to like assert your and listen to your own true self and the wisdom of the ages.
Yeah, but when doctors and pharmaceuticals are the third biggest killer, you know, according to John Hopkins and all sorts of, you can find it easily, the documentation on that. There, like you said, the distrust of what's happening in mainstream the medical system, it's very easy to start looking for other methods of care.
Yeah, totally. And then when you find a plant that works, like the fuzzy, friendly rosette with the beautiful stalk of yellow flowers, that's also my introduction to herbalism plant, because I'm an asthmatic. And the first time I ever tried using like a mullein leaf tea, I was like, wow, I'm hooked. This works. I don't have to use my inhaler as often. And this is like, you know, such a amazing but simple thing. And it just leads you right down that path and you can't look back.
That's right. Yay.
Yeah.
Well, you have personal firsthand experience of how it can work, you know, and that's better than any study or anything when you can actually see it for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. And there's a relationship is built between the person and the plant world.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And so did you continue on your herbal studies and find your way into astrology around that same time of like experimenting with the plants yourself? Like, how did you get into, you know, herbalism as medicine and then, you know, astrology as well?
Yeah. Well, it was from the old Farmer's Almanac.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
Yeah. So it was great. So at the time when I had my son, I quit my regular job so I could be at home with him. And I thought that I would just be growing herb transplants for a living. And then when I think about that, I thought, wow, what a humble goal. Mm-hmm. But anyway, but when I saw how the plants were working on this other level, I definitely kept going with that. And the astrology came in just so. In all of our careers, we add another layer of knowledge. Just like Isaac just mentioned, he's doing Vedic astrology now. So for me, I was a horticulture major, layered on herbalism. Then the herbal medicine and medicine making became important to me. And from there, I started picking up the old Farmer's Almanac and started dialing in my planting and harvesting times to that. Mm-hmm. And then right after that is when certified organic became a thing. It was just another layer of my horticulture practice.
Yeah, so you start with one thing and then get that down and then add more things on top of that and to create more depth. So
right.
How did your herb farm get started?
That was my goal ever since I was a teen, to have a family farm. Mm-hmm. So that was just like the base of the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. It's definitely, farming is serious business. You know what I mean? Like, it takes a lot of work to grow anything, but especially herbs. And what kind of herbs do you specialize in? Like,
Well, I do love lemon balm the most, but I, of course, I love everything the most. So we have a great patch of lemon balm. Because of my teas, I have a really exquisite two different mints, a spearmint and a peppermint, but these are like the best cultivars. And echinacea, of course, but then I've got smaller patches of rhodiola, eleutherocott, astragalus, let's see, and both kinds of skullcap, Baikal, and the
Scutellaria lentiflora.
yeah,
Mad
lateriflora.
dog, yeah.
Oh yeah, mad
Yeah,
dog.
so it just goes on and on. I mean, I've got, you probably have seen the overview of the
Yeah.
farm. Yeah. So anyway, I just love plants. So now I just bought a book called The Lean Farm, learning how to like not be so enthusiastic and try to do everything.
Yeah, that's my problem is I'm more of a plant collector than a farmer. So I
Yeah.
just want to my goal is to have like a botanical garden
No.
eventually, you know. But so
Yeah.
you do a lot of perennials, focus
Yeah,
on
I
perennials.
do. And but then there's rows of calendula, of course, and chamomile and things like that. But you just said a botanical garden. So I do have a garden that's based on the chakra system for educational purposes. So there's plants that are situated in each of those areas that correspond to supporting those body systems. And then I was able to layer on the planets when I took Kepler courses. Kepler's a college online courses on astrology, and I just needed that background for supporting my book. Then I learned about how the planets can correspond to the chakras, and so I layered in that to the garden. It's a really, really great educational place to be.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, I
Yeah.
love those conceptual gardens that have like a theme like that and that are and they're magical as well, you know.
Yeah, you're right about that.
So can you just describe a little bit more about your land? Like you have this beautiful chakra garden and then you have like rows of herbs. Like how many acres? What is it like there?
Well, you can get the whole story in the introduction in the book because it's a magical story too. How I say it was a gift from Gaia, that land. So because we have 130 acres and I was just looking for 5 acres or any place to grow my herbs. And so it's amazing because we just have about 3 acres under cultivation. My husband, David Stevens, is a horticulturist as well, and he's the curator at the UW, University of Wisconsin Arboretum. So he's got this eye for public gardens and makes everything look, yeah, very polished. Where,
Nice.
you know, I have a hard time weeding because I love my weeds. They're medicine. So anyway, he does a lot of cool mowed paths, and we have some pasture which we don't cut until after 4th of July, so a rare bird called the bobolink can nest there. So we do have a great habitat for that. And then half of our land is wooded. And so that's really beautiful too. I can collect some medicinals off the edges and within the woods. We have wild yam growing in our woods. And
Nice.
yeah, so it's just such an amazing piece of property. And I tell David the, you know, that we were chosen to be there, like to be stewards of the land. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's pretty amazing. I hope you can visit sometime.
Oh my gosh, I would love to. Absolutely love to. All the pictures in your book, I'm just like, I want to go hang out on that beautiful bench in the garden with the
On over.
lavender and the roses and flowers.
Nice.
Yeah, so cool. So with your farm, you had sort of some experiences that you alluded to just now of it being a gift of Gaia and experiences of like divine timing with the farm. So I don't know if you want to tell that story of how you got the farm, but also I'm just curious, like what is divine timing and how does it like shape our lives, you know?
Yeah, well, you know, I have to say that just the way it unfolded with the farm would be just divine timing, even though I wasn't looking at astrology through that lens to find it. But the fact that at the time I was a single mom with an herb company, all of the bankers and real estate agents were really like blowing me off and laughing around 1990, which like you would think we'd be more evolved by then, but not maybe in rural Wisconsin. So anyway, the person who owned this land was an eccentric, amazing woman from near Chicago, and she never had a license, and her husband, it was more of her husband's place, who had crashed his airplane and died. And so she'd been owning this property and renting it for about 20 years, and it was really in disrepair. So when I offered to buy it, I offered her like a much lower rate that she accepted. And then she let me buy it, since the banks wouldn't take me seriously. She let me buy it through a land contract where I paid her for 3 years. And then I had some collateral to go to the bank. So, wow. I mean, all of those stories are just like miracles, it seems like, for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
We similarly, when we, for us to get this place, it was a same kind of divine timing, you know?
Yeah. I think
it's common for, not that common, obviously, but it seems to be what Gaia wants, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Land needs some stewards.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. That's what I tell young farmers when they're feeling so desperate, when they're looking for land. Like, no, just keep going. I mean, yeah. I was in several times looking for this place. I don't know about you with your situation, but yeah.
Took a while.
Yeah. And then that's just becomes part of your story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So how does understanding the cycles of the stars and planets and the moon, how does that like open doors for us? And how do we like ourselves understand like divine timing through these planetary cycles?
Well, you're speaking to a farmer through the farmer lens. So I'm going to have to dial this down into growing. And but that, of course, is opening up all sorts of stuff for me too. But so for me, you know, I look at first the phases of the moon for when I'm going to plant. The first, starting at the new moon till the first week, you know, so you have the new moon, and the week after that is good for planting above ground crops that hold their seeds outside their fruit. So not tomatoes and peppers, but a lot of the herbs would fit into this category. So I plant those plants then, and then after, when the first quarter comes, a week after the new moon, and last till the full moon, that's for planting, especially above ground plants, but especially those that have fruits that hold seeds inside their fruit. Anyway, I still plant some herbs because you can't get it all done in 1 week.
Yeah.
So that, then comes like, okay, we're in Libra right now. So, or is Libra starting tomorrow? Anyway, I'm going to be planting flowers as soon as Libra is here, which I know is, I think it's today and tomorrow. So Libra is great for flowers because it's an air sign. Plus, it's balanced and beauty and creates harmony. So I'll be putting in my calendula, chamomile, zinnia, and marigolds. You know, I'll be putting those into just pots in warm places and flat. So, and then also it's a full moon today, so it's good to do something in a ritualistic manner, something where you take it to a different level. And so like marigolds have a lot of spiritual energy around them. You know, I'll probably plant some marigolds in this full moon day for that purpose of just, you know, maybe I'll put world peace in unity into my intention there. Yeah. So, you know, that's how I use them, you know, and then come roots, and I've got a whole lot of root crops I need to start. So I'm looking forward to this coming week. And we have a Scorpio later in the week. So that's a good one that'll be good for roots. So it's water, which is it does correspond to leaves. But I find that, like, say, they say Pisces is good to plant roots in, even though it's a water sign, because if you think of the fish, it goes below the earth's surface. And that's one thing I really like to do. And I've learned this just from looking and studying and gaining, using some intuitive guidance too, about like, when you look at the signs of the astrological signs, you know, these are really archetypal symbols that have been here before. You know, the energy was there before the symbol. And so
Yeah.
by looking at these signs, you can gain some insights. You know, so anyway, I do use that to,
Yeah.
looking at signs.
Yeah, so I also like to garden with the moon, and how I started with this, I started with signs first, just like planting in general on water signs and in Taurus, you know.
Okay.
And then I factor in the moon's the phase sometimes, but it seems like there's an awful lot to get started with for somebody who doesn't know how to even look up the moon signs, or isn't into astrology that much, or also maybe not even into gardening yet, like getting started in gardening, getting started in these things. What have you found is the biggest like bang for your buck? Like what would you do first? Moon phase, moon sign? Yeah.
Okay. I think, okay. Well, neither. But my biggest thing for my buck is this. If you have 1 hour to garden or you have a couple hours, you can consult your calendars and decide whether you're going to weed, plant. What are you going to do for those 2 hours? And that's how I use it to make my time most efficient. So, I loved it when my editor from Chelsea Green said, I love this calendar because, if I have 1 hour to garden, I just like look at it and decide, should I plant a few lettuce seeds? Should I go weed, and or should I harvest something? And that's how I think, because astrology is such a great tool to understand timing. And I also like the angle of, instead of your ego driven, you can kind of step back and try to get in that bigger energy, the bigger flow, and let that guide you. Like, that's pretty cool. This is really kind of based on the old farmer's almanac style, but I, added some other things to it too.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I feel like that's so helpful to just have a little bit of structure in your daily gardening activities, like just to guide your own rhythm. Because honestly, like it's all gonna get done or not, but to know, like, oh, it's a root day, maybe this is a good day to plant my root crops or to harvest my root crops, like that is just so helpful in creating like your own rhythm, and the rhythm, following the rhythm of the planets and stars. So yeah, I love that.
And people who buy my herb transplants say they grow so well. That they re and I, well, I only noticed from what's on my land, but I get great feedback about those who come to my herb sales too. And I am born to kind of plant things, my oh, and pick things. So I do that part of it. But yeah, it's interesting to see what happens when you follow these bigger rhythms. Go ahead.
Another thing, though, is important is to cultivate the green thumb part of it as well. And like Rosemary Gladstar, who wrote the foreword, says like when she got started, she kind of took on too much with gardening and this and astrology, and she didn't even take care of the fundamental things of making sure like the soil had enough compost in it, or So you also talk in here about like using vermiculite, for instance, to start your seeds in. So like, do you have any tips for like getting on that aspect of like the actual gardening and green thumb tips? Like
That's a
how do you start your seeds?
I think, with starting seeds indoors in pots, a more sterile, which that means no pathogens or weed seeds are in there, is important. And I talk about that in my book. So, I mean, people have success with different methods. I just happen to use vermiculite because, well, they are a really clean surface to put your seeds on so you can see and watch them really well. They hold moisture. It holds moisture well, but still a lot of air. Like, air is super important for germinating seeds, which a lot of like novice growers don't understand the importance of air compared to water when it comes to seeds, plants.
Yeah, like
So,
getting the soil composition just right to not be like too dense or, too loose, like,
yeah.
but you're
Yeah.
saying the looser the better, really.
depends, of course, if I do Nicotiana seeds or like sacred tobacco, those are so small, they're like a pepper shaker. So you
Yeah.
need a tinier vermiculite to set them
Oh.
up, or they fall down in between these holes that would usually hold a seed up. Yeah.
Yeah, there's little nuances for
Yes.
sure. Yeah.
Talking about the air and the water kind of leads us into like the elements, which
Yeah.
is a, I mean, that's what your farm's named after. But it also, like, when you look into like the zodiac, actually, like that's it's built out of the elements. So how did you get like how do you use the elements and
Yeah.
what's the importance of them for you? Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome because it's a perfect segue from the four quarters of the moon or the phases of the moon, rather. And because that's to me the next layer is the elements.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, like, I like that you just chose water signs and Taurus because you know that they're good for it's good for leaves. But to me, that's it's an easy next step instead of getting all the nuances of all the 12 zodiac signs. You can just, if you can just grasp the elements and then start using those as your next layer after you do the phases of the moon. It's like to me the next step. So leaves correspond to water signs and seeds correspond to, and fruits correspond to fire. Roots, of course, correspond to earth signs and air signs correspond to flowers. So even using that as a guide provides another layer of understanding and guidance to what you're going to do that day.
Totally. It makes sense,
Yeah.
those correspondences for sure. And with the going back to the cycles of the moon for a second, I just wanted to highlight the acronym that can really help to visualize the cycles of the moon, the DOC. Can you tell us about the DOC and the phases of the moon?
Yeah. So I have the great pleasure and honor of running of going around and teaching about my book. So it's so fun to stump people on these very basic concepts, or it's I don't have to be so playful. I'm so happy to educate them on these
Yeah.
things. So the letter D, if you think of the letter D, I can't tell if this
I
is
see
turning
it.
backward.
No, you're doing
Okay, anyway. Okay. D corresponds to the first quarter. When you look at a moon and it's shaped more like a D, even if it's a balsamic or narrow crescent moon, if it's shaped like the crescent part of the D, that's the first quarter of the moon. Then O, as in the word dock, becomes the full moon. And the letter C is then the last quarter of the moon. So it's really easy. It's a great way to just glance up at the sky. And when you see a moon that's not round, that's a way that you can tell which quarter it is. It's great. And I have another one that stumps everybody except for two people out of thousands. And I ask, when does the new moon rise? And you're going to know because you're an astrologer when the new moon rises. But I'm telling you
Sunrise.
what, and yes, you're right. So, but in just regular gardening classes or herbal classes that I teach to, nobody knows this. And just think, what it's so important for me to teach that is it just shows me how our culture is so disconnected from the rhythms of nature. This has
Yeah.
happened every month that we've all been on this planet, and nobody knows this. And I just think, and that's the point I like to make. Like, look, our culture is out of touch with the rhythms of nature. Let's pay more attention here.
Yeah. Another thing about our culture that you bring up in the book is how we really idolize the solar side of nature, the sun, like the sun is bringing all life on planet, but we really de-emphasize the yin side, the lunar, the moon, and the moon does have an influence on us. So can you talk a little bit about that, the influence and importance of the moon with on life and plants?
Oh, well, yeah. First of all, that quote, I'm so glad you found that. And it's in my PowerPoint because to me, it's so important how it's a guy named Jabbar from New York Times science editor, right? So he's got some credibility. And, but he said, like, how we endowed the sun with all this power. Like, if you say sun, everyone gets it, right? The minute you say moon, Like people are like, oh, that's too woo-woo. For example, my own local gardening show will not have me on as a guest because of the title of this book. But
Really?
yeah, so thanks you too.
Yeah,
Yeah.
we got you.
Yeah, that's good. So anyway, but the moon, I mean, I like that you said, let's just pay attention to the inside of life, you know? And what I like is the subtlety and the rhythm of it, really, and to honor the rhythm of it. And, you know, I think, like, I've talked to several astrologers who try to use the full moon and new moon day more for ritual and being quiet and inward, just, and, you know, I think, wouldn't it be a better culture if we had a day a month for like prayer or a retreat? You know, just think the changes we could make.
Yeah,
Absolutely.
in
That
my
answer your question?
yeah, I've
Okay,
been
good.
thinking a lot about the solely lunar calendar, which many cultures have, and ancient Germanic culture used to have a solely lunar calendar. It was based on the equinoxes, but then also what moon it was. It was, and they still have that in India, and so that's why I'm learning about it. But it Julius Caesar is actually the person who made our calendar entirely solar, you know? So now the
Oh.
whole the Julian and then the Gregorian calendar is based in just on the sun. And it's like it's been that long since like this whole culture has removed the lunar influence, you know?
It works for really well for a certain segment of society.
Right, yeah. If you're an emperor, if you're going to
Yeah,
war,
exactly.
you want to like
You're a
dominate.
capitalist. Yeah.
The sun is all about domination and control. Well, in a certain aspects of it, and there's a lot more to the sun. It does give life. It, you know, there's so many beautiful aspects of the sun, but it is more like an emperor as opposed to
Yes.
the mother.
We're following you.
But yeah, the moon is just so special because it gives us this visual daily reminder of like where we're at in the cycle. And, you know, we can glean a lot of information from what the moon is doing in the sky on base and like base our actions around it, you know, like planting above ground crops in the waxing moon and below ground crops in the waning moon, you know, like we can just see it. And so I wish we had a little bit more of a lunar calendar than the solar.
Well, yeah.
Well, we're doing it today. We're planting those seeds today. So I'm in a worldwide group called TSG Foundation. It's out of Arizona, but that we do full moon meditations every month. And so it's just really wonderful because it highlights the best features of whatever sign that is, and how to just really polish up that aspect of your personality.
Awesome.
So for me, my big ritual for the full moons is really that. And I to layer on the equinox, I just not sure how. I just know it's a more potent day and I want to lay a little low.
Yes.
So yeah, so that's kind of the way I see that.
Very potent energy and
Well, also one of the things we're laying those seeds for the more lunar calendar now, but it can be an individual thing, like just in a group thing too, like doing a full moon meditation every moon, every full moon, or in a new moon meditation and a new moon, and being part of a group that does that. That's you're cultivating that track in space, you know, in now, and making it manifest in the world, making it easier then for more people to do it too.
Yeah, I like having sort of ritual around the full moon or the new moon. We have like a women's circle around here that we started last year, and we meet either on the new moon or the full moon. We've been trying both. We can't really decide what we like better. Like in the new moon, we are kind of more like introspective, and it's sort of hard to like just get ourselves to the circle. But then on the full moon, we're so like, I don't know, it's just such an intense energy. So we're still figuring out if we want to meet on the new moon or full moon.
That's so cool. Yeah, and I could see how both of those would work, but how many people show up for this?
There's like between 6 and 11 or so of us.
Nice.
Yeah, small
I want
group.
to know what you end up voting on the full
I
moon neighborhood.
know. Yeah. And it kind of changes like when our cycles start too, like for the menstruating people, like if everyone's bleeding on the full moon, then we all just want to like stay home and be in our cocoons.
Yes.
So it might change too. But yeah, I like having some sort of ritual like to do for each of those cycles of the moon.
Yeah.
And also just, I mean, when you start planting by the moon, just in terms of phases, then you get in touch, you get more in touch with the moon and with the
Yeah.
moon cycle, and you get the visceral experience of it. And I think one thing I like to do also is like just greet the sun and the moon every time I see them for the first time that day, or night. It's like every morning, when I see the sun, I greet the sun, and then in the nighttime, I greet the moon. And then you see the moon, you see what phase it's in. You can do the DOC to make sure if you're not sure. But just like doing those, d making doing the actions in the daily life. That's how it like builds, I think. Yeah.
Right. You're tuning yourself to the moon that and the planets and a bigger energy there. So that sounds so beautiful.
So speaking of rituals, in your acknowledgement section of the book, you have a mention of Les Guimaraes. Did I say their name right?
Yes, he did.
Okay,
They
so is one of the people that you acknowledged, and you said that the Rue ritual that you did with them was really impactful, and it definitely sparked my interest. Like, what's the Rue ritual? So I don't know if you want to share about that.
Okay, so Les Guimaraes was my meditation teacher for about 25 years. And she moved to Chicago to be with her daughter and grandchildren now. But so she was trained in this really esoteric school in Brazil. And so our meditations were quite esoteric, the violet flame and things like that. But she, because coming from Brazil, rue is a spiritual plant. And so, and I grow rue, right? So what we did was take rue branches and dip them in water and kind of splash it on ourselves. But the thing that happened to me that day was I had this weird bump on my elbow, like a watery bump. And I just thought, and she kept talking about how rue opens up channels and cleanses our, fields. And I just thought, wow, I have this bump in the way, So I thought, well, maybe if I eat just one rue leaf a day, which just like less than my little finger, just a tiny bit of a rue, because rue can be toxic. You don't want to have too much. So I thought maybe then my bump on my elbow will go away. So the sixth day, I said for 7 days, right? So on the sixth day, I had a bit of a headache, and I never have a headache. And I thought, oh, maybe it's that rue I'm eating. And I felt my elbow, and that bump went away.
Wow.
Yeah,
Amazing.
but we know plants work. So I mean, I spent the first whatever. Okay, I've been studying herbs since the 80s. Like, so the first 40 or 30 years, I've been going, wow, it really worked. Now, if it doesn't work, I'll go, wow, what happened? Herb. I always thought that was so funny. You'd get together with all these herbalists who knew what they were doing, and we'd go, wow, this story worked. And then finally, it kind of sw switched for me where it's like, wow, it didn't work.
That's really funny.
But that's the way that's how you know it's a real thing, when it because in this plane, nothing's ever perfect. And like you if it has ha doesn't a lot of times things don't, like in science even, there's a lot of stuff that doesn't work. And you have to like that's how you know it's a real thing. If you go to a doctor and like their success rate is not much better than herbalist, but the herbalist is
Wait,
poo-poo,
wait, wait, wait. I would switch that statement up. We have
Right?
already covered that doctors and a pharmacy and hospitals are the third biggest killer. Come on. If an herb killed one person, do you know how quickly that would be pulled from the market? Like, goodness, even like Coltsfoot and Comfrey, that whole story on the PAs, the pyrrolizidine alkaloids,
Nice, you got it.
that. Like David Hoffman, one of my favorite herbalists, says, if or coltsfoot tea killed people, half the people would be dead in England in that year, in like the 1500s or whatever.
Right.
Right.
It's just, I don't know. We don't have to talk about that too much, but it's really, that was the herb community being overly cautious for a good reason. When a scientist, I think it was in Spain, discovered there were PAs in comfrey and coltsfoot, but we are very cautious for a good reason. And so I think you might want to retract or rethink your statement, Isaac.
Right.
Well, that's how the popular culture looks at it, you know?
Right.
And they see doctors as valid and herbalists as not valid, even though doctors have they certainly don't have a better success rate in terms of healing. In fact, they kill a lot more people.
Yeah.
It's very true. But there's like different standards, mm-hmm. you know?
I'll say.
And you talk about that in your book too, about how like, you know, say there's a train derailment in Ohio. Mm-hmm. And what are the legislation involved in like what they can do and what they can't do, what fines they're going to pay. Meanwhile, you're growing plants in the ground and you have to meet all of these FDA requirements to
it's
even be
more
able to.
And trains carrying toxic chemicals across countries and through urban areas. Like you who, I mean, yeah, I get really upset over this. We might have to change the subject.
Okay. I'm sorry. You're triggering the Aries son.
Yeah, it's intense. I mean, you know, with the governmental organizations that are supposed to be protecting us, like the EPA and the FDA, like really just working hand in hand with the corporations, it really puts an emphasis on like us. Like we can't depend on the government or the you know, EPA or the FDA to really like be protecting us. And that's one thing I really love about your book is that it gives you this like toolbook, and like the power is really in our hands as humans to be healing the earth and not just destroying the earth, but like we have to be taking that power into our own hands and into our own hearts and planting plants and growing our own food and being that new standard, you know. So I love how you stress that in your book.
Yeah, I mean, like Margaret Mead said, never think that a small group of individuals can't change the world. It's the only thing that has. We can't rely on our government. I mean, I live in this beautiful rural area. Check out my website and that picture of the land. There are so many people with cancer around here. There is so much spraying of glyphosate and Roundup. Or, you know, like, why is that still legal? We know it causes cancer. It's causing so much suffering in these rural communities. Like, there are just so many households. I mean, that's criminal to me.
Yeah.
So I really do applaud what you say when you said you can't rely on those government agencies to protect us. We have this lovely representative, Mark Pocan, who came to my small apothecary in North Freedom last week to hear my concerns about what I've got going with herbalism. And I asked him, like, what's with, you know, pharmacy, there's so many pharmaceuticals that are hurting people. And he said, well, there's 15,000 lobbyists in Washington and 10% of those are for the pharmaceutical industry. And, you know, and then we just talked a little bit about the end of democracy, like that Citizens United or whatever it's called, where corporations became people so they could just buy whatever law they want. And so anyway, I love what you're saying about let's bring it back to the groups of individuals.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Change what we have some control over, you know, too.
It's like what we eat, organic, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Farmers markets.
Yeah, go to the farmers markets, grow, you know, some herbs in potted plants in your windowsill or, just spend time with the tree. And yeah, there's a lot that we can do and it can feel hopeless. Honestly, like we're on that healing track. And we talk to people every week on this podcast who are making huge waves in their communities as far as like connecting folks to the plants. And you're definitely one of those people. You know, you have this apothecary and the herb farm, and you have employees, and you know, you influence so many people with your with educating about the herbs and this book. So you're one of them. You're doing it.
Thank you. And you are too. You're getting the word out. See, here we go.
Yeah.
Positive change.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah. Us.
And I just want to, I think it's good. The growing healing plants, growing healing food, but growing healing gardens, I think, is also a way to the future that we want. That's something that I love too. And I really love your chakra gardens. I love that, like the conceptual gardens, theme gardens, magical gardens. And I hadn't heard this idea before, and we talked about it a little bit, but would you like to share with us like how you came up with the idea for the chakra gardens, how you planted them, how you chose those plants?
Sure. This is a fun topic. So one winter, we had no snow and it was very cold. So that was just recently after I moved to the farm. So my garden was up right where the chakra garden is now. But anyway, so it's just a few rows of herbs closer to the house. And so all the perennials died, the sage, the thyme, the lavender, everything was dead that spring. And it didn't take me too long to see how nature regenerates itself, that there was a space for a formal garden there. My husband and I both met at a botanical garden. We were both working at the Dallas Arboretum. And so we like formality in gardens as well as nature. So I wanted to make this a formal garden, right? Educational. At the same time, my friend Lisa Hartman gave me a book on the chakra system, and it had those beautiful emblems of each of the chakras on the cover. And I looked at that. There's a garden design.
Yeah.
So then I just started implementing. It took me about 3 years to really pull it together. So it's, you know, you just put plants that support each of the areas of the body. But here's a really fun story. And you talked about making magical spaces. So what happened was I planted a rugosa rose in the first chakra because your first chakra represents your family and your lineage. And so it needed some love there. And so I put the rose. And 1 year I'm weeding out the garden and a small little elder bush was growing there. And there's no way I could weed out an elder. I love them so much, right?
Yeah.
I'm the worst weeder because I love all the weeds.
Yeah.
Unless I take them in the house. I hate them. So anyway, so I walked away. I just didn't know what to do. And it didn't take me too long to realize that the elder planted itself right in the front of the first chakra. Like perfect spacing, right?
Wow.
And so now both of the rugosa rose and the elder live in harmony there. It's really beautiful.
Love it.
And I find different plants moving into their right places, like motherwort in the fourth chakra for the heart. And and so I have plants that support each of these areas. And what's nice about it compared to the field is that I can just have representation of small clumps of these plants to educate people who might only have seen these words, the name of the plant written on a plastic bottle in a store, right? So here they get to meet the plant.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I love that. That's what we're trying to do here too, because we don't have as much space as you do, but we're, you know, trying to make specimens in gardens that people can learn and become introduced to the plants, because the plants are people too. And like getting to meet them in person, really, like, it just takes it to a whole other level. But I love this, the chakra gardens. I love this concept. I've been thinking a lot about and like planting my zodiac gardens.
Yeah.
You know, and planting, you know, plants based on like the Culpepper's correspondences. And then there's also the zodiacal man or zodiacal human, the zodiacal woman, the cosmic person, you know, and
aren't
and
we all?
Yes, right. We're microcosms of the macrocosm. So I wonder, have you experimented with that at all, like in terms of like plants that correspond with those the zodiac signs and planets?
Yeah, that is where I want to go next with my studies, and if hopefully I will really master that, that I could write a book on that one. That would be my next. Because you mentioned Culpepper, and Culpepper is such a hero in herbalism. You might not know that he translated the herb books from Latin to English so that the common people could heal themselves. Before that, you know, the doctors and the priests were holding all that knowledge just for themselves. And so this really freed the people of England then. So anyway, but then I just love his knowledge of how, and when we get into that subject, we see how everything is really is a web of life. So, I mean, I've added the planets to my chakra garden now, and that's really fun, but I'd like to really study more of this whole Culpepper thing.
Sure. There's a wonderful system that has been semi-lost, but has maintained, like Culpepper has never been out of print, you know?
Right. Isn't that fabulous? It's
always been there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's just under the surface.
Mm-hmm.
But that's beautiful. I love like being able experimenting and bringing these, using the tradition as a way to experiment and bring things forward into the present, into the future that we create together. And, you know, part of the small groups of people changing the world, you know, like that's the other thing with magic too, is it has outsized impact, you know? So by creating these magical gardens, then you can help heal and like affect the consciousness in a more potent way, I think.
What is outsized impact?
Well, the way I see it, so that's my theory of magic. I mean, I don't think it's my theory, but it's like, that's why we do magic, because we can affect the world in an outsized way. So you do one thing, any action that you would normally do, if you add the magical aspect to it, then
it ripples out.
Yeah, you magnify its potency. That's the way I see it.
And, you know, if that word of, you know, doesn't resonate with some people, we could just say with prayer too, you know, like with intent, you know, it's just, I call it my white magic wand, in which I consider just learning the nature's potency, just learning what's already there. That's out of that, not in sight, basically. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but I love what you're saying. And that's why one thing I'd like to ask, mention is just like, let's think of the unity as a concept that, you know, of bringing people together, because I just think, I mean, I still have a New York Times. Oh my gosh. Oh, swans are just flying by right now.
What?
Nice.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah. So anyway,
white magic.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. So anyway, where was I?
The unity of,
oh yeah, just it's really important. I keep the New York Times just so I can do the puzzles, and I quickly skip over the front page or the rest of the piece, because like I just don't like all this talk of fighting. I'm just sick of it. So anyway, I just like to, and I think my time is better spent thinking of how to bring people together.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I always think of like the Serenity Prayer a lot. It's like, what do you actually have control over? What can you actually do, and how can you, and then also how can you create things, create the world you want to see, rather than railing against things you can't change.
Pretty futile, and you feel hopeless and disempowered,
and I think that's part of the goal.
You're not the only one.
Also, just how cool is it that you had motherwort growing up in your heart chakra and the elder in the root chakra, and you had the wisdom to be like, oh yeah, come on, friends, grow here. I just love that.
Isn't it wonderful to play with nature, no matter what scale, like even going for a walk? And I love every garden. I don't care if it's 3 feet by 3 feet, you know, they're all just so wonderful. So
yeah. When you play with nature, nature plays back.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Let's do more of that.
Yeah. I hope to see your garden someday. Me and Isaac make a habit of going on like botanical garden dates and touring. Whenever we go someplace, we try to seek out the cool like gardens, farms.
Cool.
So, yeah.
Come to Wisconsin.
I would love to.
Yes. Well, yeah, I really appreciate you being on the show. This has been a fantastic conversation. We got to get into The Celestial Garden. I think this is a fantastic book for people who are wanting to start their like astrological gardening journey, because it really, you lay it all out. You've got tips and tricks. You go by the phases of the moon, and there's just so much in there. So I think it's a fantastic contribution.
Yeah, thank you
Yeah.
so much. And thank you for what you're doing too.
Thank
And
you.
for folks who want to learn more about you, how can they get in touch, or what, where should they go online?
So my website is called Four Elements Organic, no, FourElementsHerbals.com. But my daughter does a fantastic Instagram and Facebook account, Four Elements Herbals, also. So
Awesome.
one of these days we'll get on TikTok.
Yeah.
It'll happen.
Yeah.
Do you have anything coming up that you're excited for, or what,
Yeah,
anything
so
you can share?
June 1st, we have open farm day. So we
Ooh,
open
nice.
the farm, and my husband participates. He's so knowledgeable with native trees and shrubs. He
Nice.
gives his tour. So we have two tours at 12:30 and 2:30. He'll take people in the wild areas. And then I do the chakra garden and the cultivated fields. And then there'll be an awesome plant sale that day as well.
Oh, cool. That's
Yeah. So if you're in
great.
the, we're an hour from Madison, Wisconsin, so, and people from Minneapolis and Chicago have come. So that's our big event coming up.
Awesome. And
Yeah.
you have an apothecary. Is that open to the public, or?
Yeah, Monday through
Okay,
Friday, just
awesome.
regular hours, probably till 4, just to make sure, we can, people leave around 4:30. So that's good. And I guess other exciting news, I got invited to the Hampton Park Flower Show to speak in England in July, in early July. So that's my first international gig. I'm excited.
Yay, that's so
Awesome.
cool.
Yeah.
Sounds awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really fun.
They're a little more into the astrological gardening in England than in rural Wisconsin.
I can't wait to find out.
Yeah.
Cool.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Well,
Well,
thank
thank
you
you.
so much, Jane. This has been really awesome to get to know you and hear about your work. So thanks for being on the show.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me. You have a great growing season, okay?
You
You too.
too. Cheers.
All right.